I love a good epic story. You know, the kind of stories that are big stories, like the Lord of the Rings, stories like that, which are, there's this journey, there's a good versus bad, evil versus good, and that the good is always the victor. No matter where in the story you're going, and sometimes you go, oh, I don't know if they can win. Always, you kind of at the back of your mind, you go, nope, the good always wins. Because you know what? Movies where the good doesn't win, they don't sell. And books where the good doesn't win, they don't sell either. So the good always wins. And even though the victory sometimes seems uncertain, the good always wins. And now that kind of story, sometimes the good characters, they have flaws in their character. But there's never any question about who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. We always really know that. Sometimes there's a plot twist where we discover a good guy was a bad guy or a bad guy was really a good guy. But in general, we know who the good guys are. We know who the bad guys are. Lord of the Rings is a great example because the bad guys, they look like bad guys. They're monsters. they're literally monsters. And so you can easily tell. It's a kind of a story where darkness and death threaten everything good and have to be stopped, often by unlikely heroes. These are the fairy tales of our childhood. Wherever you lived, wherever you were a child in the world, there were probably stories, there were probably some kind of fairy tales that were told that had good versus bad. I think about the story of Hansel and Gretel, these two children who were out wandering, found a house made of candy, and were eating it, and then it turns out there was an evil witch who lived there who invited them in, promising more candy, only what she was really doing was going to cook them and have them for dinner. The good and the evil was really easy to see. Snow White is another fairy tale, another story that some of us know from our childhood. Snow White had this evil stepmother, because we all know stepmothers, always evil. Send her into the woods with one of her huntsmen with instructions that he was supposed to kill her. The good are the good and the bad are clearly the bad. You probably have stories that you grew up with, stories that you're familiar with a similar kind of a tale to them. But the thing is that real life isn't like that, is it? In real life, things are far more complicated because real life is a mess. In real life, the good and the bad characters aren't very easy to tell apart. The bad often masquerade as the good. And then our prejudices, our biases, and our past experiences often lead us to make faulty assumptions about who is bad and who is good. Maybe somebody looks a certain way, and so we assume, oh, they must be bad, or oh, they must be good. Maybe it's because of what somebody does for their work, how they manage to put a roof over their head. We think, oh, people who work in that kind of field, they're bad people, versus these people are good people. Maybe because of where a person lives. Oh, nothing good comes out of that neighborhood. This in the Bible, this happened too with Jesus when people... Jesus was preaching and teaching and people were overwhelmed and they found out he came from Nazareth and they went, nothing good comes out of Nazareth, right? They made this assumption based upon where he grew up. And I wonder if just if you can think of a time, maybe, when you assumed something about another person only to discover that you were completely wrong. You don't have to say it out loud or anything like that, but just try and think of a time when maybe you assumed somebody was bad or they were mean or they hated you or you assumed all sorts of things based on maybe what you were witnessing, their behavior. Maybe it was just their skin color or where they lived or the language they spoke, whatever it is, only to discover, oh, they're not the horrible things I thought. Or vice versa, right? Somebody who you looked at and you thought, oh, great person, and oops, not so great. Right? Because we can't always tell. And we don't like to admit those times when we make those mistakes, especially the ones where we assume somebody's bad and it turns out they're not as bad as we thought that they were. We don't like to admit those mistakes, but we make them. And the parable that Jesus told that we read today from Matthew 13, the parable of the weeds, when I read it, I hear a caution against making those kind of assumptions about people. It's a caution against what is a very human tendency to want to categorize everything. You know, we're told in Genesis that when Adam was in the garden and God gave him work to do, and the work he gave him was, all the animals are going to come to you and you're going to name them. You're going to put them into categories, right? So it's right in the garden. We like to categorize. We were given work around categorizing. It's part of our human nature. But with everything, there's an old saying in leadership development circles that every strength has a dark side. And so, you know, you might be really great at categorizing and figuring out where things or where people fit. But the dark side of that is you put people into their categories, into their boxes, into their groups without really knowing who they are, without really, really knowing what those groups are. There's this noxious weed, this horrible weed that was, it may still be, I don't know, but it used to be found all over Israel. And the weed has a name, it's called darnel or something along those lines. But the point is that this weed looks exactly like wheat. They're standing side by side, you cannot tell the difference between the two until the plants have fully grown and they're ready to be harvested. Because at that time, the wheat, the ears, what we call the ears of the wheat, or the part of the wheat that we really use, in a wheat plant, it gets heavy and it droops, it flips over. The darnel, those same ears, they look exactly the same, except they stay standing upright. It's the only time you can tell the difference between these two kinds of plants is right when they're ready to be harvested. So when the slaves said to their master, hey, we should go out and pull out the weeds, shouldn't we? The obvious answer is no, of course you can't do that, because who knows which are weeds? Who knows which are wheat? You can't tell at all. There is no way to tell. There's no way for the best gardener in the world to be able to tell which is which. And on top of that, because they grow side by side, the roots going down into the dirt, they get intertwined, they get mixed up with each other. So if you pull out this one and you happen to be right and it's a weed, you might just as easily pull out a whole bunch of wheat that's surrounding it because the roots are so connected and you can't just untie them. You can't deal with them all as little individual pieces. And so This is this dichotomy that we so often live with. This idea that there's good and there's bad, that there are two groups and there's no overlap between the two. And it kind of makes sense in our heads. They allow for clear boundaries, right? When we know who belongs and who doesn't belong, there's some clear boundaries around that. And that can be helpful. It can help us, especially when we're talking about people sometimes. We know who our family is and who our family isn't. Sometimes we think that this is really helpful. And Christians, oh my goodness, Christians, speaking generally now, not any one of us, speaking generally, Christians love to categorize. We love to say, these are the real Christians. And those are not. And I fit over here. We love to say, these ones are going to heaven, and these ones are not. Lucky me, sucks to be you. We like to decide who's a real Christian and who's not a real Christian. But this whole categorizing of people, putting people into dichotomies, is not limited to Christianity. I think we know that. You know, this political party is fiscally responsible and this one is not. This political party cares about the poor and this one does not. People who live in this country are forward-thinking and advanced, and people who live in that country are backward. People who live in this neighborhood are wealthy and those who live in that one aren't. We love to group people because then we know what to expect. Then we can make all sorts of assumptions. You know, if that country is all backwards, then, oh, I'm probably not going to visit there because I like my creature comforts and they probably don't have running water or anything, right? If this country is forward, oh, I'm going to go there. They probably have great bathrooms, right? Like, so whatever it is, we like to categorize and put these into groups. But the problem is that these dichotomies that we make, these categories that we make, whenever we do that, we make space for the absolute worst atrocities human beings are capable of. The wars that have plagued our world. Back in the last century, there was this massacre that happened in the country of Rwanda, which is a country in Africa. And you may remember hearing about this. There are two tribes of people. They actually look pretty much the same, but unfortunately, at some point in the history, Europeans had come in and said, you have slightly lighter skin, so you're going to be the rulers, and you have slightly darker skin, so you're not going to be. And what ended up happening was there was this divide, there was this dichotomy set in place. And then what happened is the anger, the hate, it all bubbled over. And the group who had been shoved to the bottom all the time pulled out machetes and massacred the group that had been at the top all the time. And it was genocide. And over the space of days, thousands and thousands and thousands of people were killed in the most horrible way. Why? Because we want to put you into groups and say, you go there and you go there, right? We want to say that some people are good and some people are bad. And it works even better if we can kind of claim that that group is not even human. One of the things that made the Rwandan genocide possible was they named the whole group of people that were being massacred, they stopped referring to them as people and started referring to them as cockroaches. Well, what do you do with a cockroach? You scream and then you stomp on it, right? And so it was no problem to massacre everybody because they were cockroaches. In World War II, how do you justify genocide, again, against the entire Jewish people? You do it by ripping them of their humanity and saying, you're human, you're not. Right? When we categorize, it can be helpful, but the dark side of these categories, of these groupings are the atrocities that get committed. We say it's okay to bomb an abortion clinic because those people are bad. It's okay to invade that country because they do bad things. But when we categorize people like this, we're usually working off generalizations, we're working off assumptions that aren't usually true, or that are at the least very faulty. We make these assumptions based on our own little experience or something that we're getting in the internet age from out there somewhere that's being sent our way. And we make these assumptions that we then go, okay, this one person did this thing. And so therefore all people who look like them or all people who sound like them or all people who come from where they come from, whatever it is, they're all the same. They go into this category. And it's faulty. Generalizations and assumptions that make us put people into groups are faulty. The slaves in Jesus' parable, they wanted to categorize the wheat and the weeds immediately so they could get rid of the weeds. Sounds great, good motive. Who wants weeds in the midst of their wheat field, right? Harvest is easier if you don't have any weeds. But they wanted to do this before the plants had even grown, before the wheat became visible, before there was any visible difference between the two groups at all, before the truth could be known. They assumed that the differences would be obvious. They'd just go out there and rip out all the weeds. But what was the householder's response to that? The householder said, nope, wait. Be patient and wait. The weeds and the wheat, let's let them grow together. Let's let them grow together, in part because if you start ripping out weeds, even if you were able to know what the weeds are, you're going to damage the wheat. And so imagine the most vulnerable people you can think of in our society as being wheat that gets destroyed, gets ripped up because we're so focused on having to get rid of the things that we've declared are bad. And so if there's some collateral damage, oops, too bad, but it was worth it in the end. But our God has no room for collateral damage. So important to remember, ours is not a God of collateral damage. Now, here's something that we have to be cautious of. God says, wait. So then what happens? The slaves and everybody who works at the farm, they go back, they go, okay, just while we'll let everything grow, and while it's growing, we'll eat, drink, and be merry, right? We'll just sit back and wait until the time, and then we'll get right into it. Then we'll get really active. But there's nothing in Scripture at all that suggests that waiting is supposed to be passive like that. Like thinking, well, there's good and there's bad, and there's nothing we can do about it. We can't even know the difference, so we'll just sit back, and God, one day you'll deal with it, right? We could take that attitude. Some people take that attitude. But that's not the attitude that Scripture calls us to, because there is work to be done in the waiting time. It's not weeding work, it's other kinds of work. Farmers, they have to fertilize, they have to keep fertilizing, they have to keep watering, they have to deal with various bugs and other pests that come along and want to eat their crop before it's ready. They have to continue to be vigilant and make sure that, the plants are growing and they are growing into healthy plants. The same is with us. You know, I've referenced this a couple times in Matthew, and there's a part of Matthew where, Jesus says, okay, there's two groups of people, there's sheep and there's goats, and the sheep are the ones who fed me and clothed me and visited me in prison and did all these things, and the goats are the ones who didn't do those things, and they say, well, like, we didn't do any of this to you. Like, how do we know who's in what group? And he says, if you did it to the least of these, meaning if you fed the hungry, if you housed the homeless, if you clothed the naked, if you visited those in prison, all of these things that are the kind of things that Jesus did, that's the work. That's the nurturing, the fertilizing, the watering, the watching, the protecting, the growing work of the waiting time. See, this work isn't about judgment. At no point in this work does the farmer go out and go, okay, I want you to fertilize that one, but not that one. I want you to water that one, but not that one. There's no judgment yet in the waiting time. There's just the work. We do what we're called to do as followers of Jesus. That's what we do while we wait. Waiting also isn't about no discernment. Right? It's not like we go, oh, we got to be careful about categorizing people, who's good, who's bad. So we got to beware of not labeling people bad who are good or vice versa. And so we should never, ever make any decisions on any of that at all. That's also not what Jesus is saying, because there are clear things in the world that are contrary to God's will, aren't there? There genocide is a great example. I'm okay, and I think God is okay with us declaring genocide is bad. Genocide is evil, right? Genocide needs to be fought against. I think that God is really clear and is okay with us being really clear that a lack of affordable, adequate housing in a city like this is not good, is evil, is harmful, is not part of God's will, right? I think it's okay for us to categorize those kind of things and make those decisions. When we say we have to sit back and wait, it doesn't mean that we sit back like without eyes to see, without learning what God loves and what God doesn't love and all of those kind of things. But the judgment against people, that's where we have to be cautious. Jesus didn't ignore the bad things he came across. He confronted them. You know, how often Jesus confronted the Pharisees, as an example. In Romans 8, there's a verse in there where Paul has something to say about waiting, and it's part of a longer passage, but I'm just going to read the one verse for you, and it's in verse 19 of Romans 8. And Paul writes to the Romans, "For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God." The creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the wheat. Now, there's an old translation of the Bible, version of the Bible called the J.B. Phillips version, and it's an old one. It's more of a paraphrase version than a kind of like the red ones that we have here. But that Bible writes that verse, the creation waits on tiptoe for the revealing, right? Like you're anticipating, you're on tiptoe, you're eager, you can't wait because you know it's coming, you know it's coming. And so you wait, and there's hope attached into that. We wait with anticipation for something that is certain. Just like when you go to see one of these epic movies or pick up one of these epic books of the tales between good and evil, you really do know that good is going to win, right? That evil is going to be defeated in the end at some point, that whatever happens between the front cover and the back cover, at the end, good wins. We have the same assurance that at the end, God is victorious. The righteousness of God is victorious. The faithfulness of God is victorious. See, we know that God is called the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, these two bookends, but we're living in all that happens between those points. But we are bookended, we are surrounded, encompassed by a God who is love, a God who is good, a God who is faithful. When we When we follow down, another point I want to draw out in Matthew 13 in this parable, and where Jesus is explaining what the parable means, all the different parts have a different role that they're representing. When we get to verse 39, we read this. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evil doers. Did you catch that? Who is going to be harvesting the wheat and the weeds? Who's going to be making the decisions about what's wheat and what's the, who's going to be separating them? Not us. The angels. Jesus is going to send his angels to do that judgment work on his behalf. Not us. We are only responsible for following Jesus to the best of our ability with the help of the Holy Spirit and the community of faith. That's it. I am not responsible for deciding whether or not you go to heaven or you go to hell. I'm not responsible for deciding if you're in or if you're out. I am not responsible for deciding at the end of the age which pile you get put in. That is not my responsibility. That's not even in my authority. I'm part of the pile. I don't get to decide who goes in which one. Isn't that a freeing thing to realize? We don't have to know who's good, who's bad. We don't need to have to know who's in and who's out. We don't have to make those judgments about people. Even if we make those judgments, God is not beholden to us to stick by them. All we do is cause damage when we start making those judgments, because it's not up to us. It's impossible for us to do. We can't see through to a person's soul. Right? We can't tell the difference between the wheat and the weeds among us without harming people. Because again, God has no room for collateral damage ever. Which leaves us with the question that we have to carry with us. Do we trust God? Do we trust God with the harvest? Do we trust him to decide who's bad, who's good? Do we trust him to decide who's in and who's out? Can we truly just leave that in God's hands and go about what we're called to do, which is following Jesus? I hope that we can, but I also know it's really hard. And it's really hard at different points in our lives, when we're facing different things. But maybe you will come back to this image of wheat and weeds side by side, so that you can remember that, just because I think that person is horrible, I might be wrong. Or just because I think that that person is worthy of standing on the great pedestal, I might be wrong. And it doesn't matter either way, because God knows. I'm just called to love them. Can we trust God enough to take that stance before him?